All right, welcome to episode 6 of the Stepping Stones Museum for Children Under the Cupola podcast. I am Kevin Begley from Star 99.9. I'll be your host for this episode. And I'm very excited to be joined today by the Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation, a very important organization for all those affected by the condition, as well as their annual Steptember event they're going to tell us about. So Jocelyn Cohen, who's the Vice President of Communications and Engagement, and Scott Graves, who's the Vice President of Business Development and Growth, they're going to join us in just a few minutes. But before we talk to Jocelyn and Scott, I really want to talk about Stepping Stones Museum for Children for a second, because myself, my wife and I have an almost 3-year-old and a newborn on the way in October, and we absolutely love Stepping Stones Museum for Children. Grace, our daughter, absolutely loves it there. She learns so much. It's such a fun place for families and kids. And in the 21 years of serving the region, Stepping Stones Museum for Children has won awards. It's reached more than 7 million people. And it's all because of the help of the members and educators and community partners to help Stepping Stones provide exceptional, playful learning opportunities for children ages 0 to 10. And they foster an understanding and appreciation for the world, which is so important. And that's also why Stepping Stones wanted to launch this Under the Cupola podcast. So that it can connect busy parents like yourself to community experts and educators who can provide valuable insight about a lot of the issues that matter most in the world right now. And this is like an audio extension of the Stepping Stones Museum for Children, which is really great. So whether you're running around in the car with the kids or commuting to work, you can put on the podcast and just listen to some really great stuff from some community people here in Connecticut. And while the indoor spaces of the museum have remained closed to the public, we've been offering a variety of outdoor and virtual events, which are really fun, classes and camps for our members and the public. And starting in September, the museum's going to be completely closed for an exciting renovation time to the museum. So including new exhibits, renovated spaces, exciting new programming, which will all be introduced and planned for November 2021 for the grand reopening of the Stepping Stones Museum for Children. So please stay tuned for that. You can visit steppingstonesmuseum.org for the latest updates and sneak peeks. And some of the big things with Stepping Stones Museum for Children are accessibility, inclusion, empathy, adventure. These things have always fueled the mission of the museum. So we're so excited to connect listeners with our inspirational guests for this episode from the Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation, Jocelyn Cohen and Scott Graves.
Thanks for having us. We're excited to be here.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having us. Thank you.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for doing it and taking the time. We are so excited to have you guys on the podcast today. We have a bunch of questions. We're going to talk about how important CPARF is. I just learned that term recently. So it's just a little abbreviation of the foundation, correct?
Yes. Yes. So Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation, we were founded 6 years ago and our name is a mouthful, but we go by CPARF to make it easier and more accessible for people to talk about.
I like that. That's great. So throughout the podcast, if people hear us saying CPARF, that's what we're referring to. Please tell us about the Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation and the important mission that it represents.
Sure. So just building on what I said, we were founded 6 years ago. We partner with an organization called Cerebral Palsy Alliance. Now you can kind of see where our name came from. That's in Australia to fund the best US-based research for cerebral palsy and to change what's possible for cerebral palsy through research. And we have 5 different research areas that we fund. They are early detection and early intervention, chronic pain, technology, regenerative medicine, and genomics.
Nice. And from what I understand, you both have very personal experiences with cerebral palsy that have inspired you to join CPARF. So Jocelyn, do you want to start by sharing your own experiences?
Sure. So I have cerebral palsy myself. I have a version of it called spastic diplegia. 70 to 80% of people with CP have spastic CP. And essentially, it makes your muscles feel really tight, like slingshots pulled all the way back that never fully release. I was diagnosed at 8 months of age back in the early 1980s. And for my whole life until I worked here, I thought that was early. And then I spoke with a researcher and they said, if you had a stroke, would you wait 8 months to treat it? And it completely changed the way I think about early intervention and early detection. So I had early intervention physical therapy and occupational therapy. And occupational therapy, for people who don't know, is when a therapist works with you on your hands to do fine motor skills like zipping a zipper, buttoning a button, you know, being able to dress yourself, things like that. So I had those two kinds of therapies until I was 4 years old. And then I was mainstreamed you know, went to mainstream school, went on to college, went on to law school. That was an error in judgment, but what can you do? And I've always been a writer. You know, I think some part of me when I was really, really little said, the physical stuff's not for you. Like, hone the thing that you're going to be really, really good at. So I've always been very verbal and very into writing. And I was a creative writing and English major. And so coming to this role has allowed me to take my personal experience, which includes all the physical therapy from age 8 months to freshman year of high school. So 15. So that's a joy when you're in middle school. I can tell you about that. And then, you know, the 5 orthopedic surgeries that I had, throughout my childhood that I used to say I had them to help me walk better, but I've recently realized, no, I had them to make sure that my joints were as aligned as they could be, to avoid any arthritis going forward, you know, to keep me out of as much pain as possible for when I'm an older person. You know, they did these surgeries on me from when I was 4 to when I was 12. And so I always thought, oh, I had the surgery to help me walk. The walking was kind of a side effect of it. The main purpose of it was to align everything as close to optimally as possible. I mean, and if you saw me now, I kind of sway. I'm a wobbler, like a weeble that wobbles and sometimes falls down. That's how I move through life. But you know, so I had all these painful things, but I also think, you know, you talked about empathy being a core value of the museum. I think that I've become a more empathetic person just through having a disability. I saw my life through a different lens when I was a kid. And I joke that I was always a 35-year-old. You know, I was talking to my best friend who I've known since kindergarten recently. And I said, was I like a 35-year-old at 5? She goes, yeah, whatever that is. Yes. You've always kind of been, that's been you. So I take my childhood experiences that made me grow up kind of fast and see the world through a certain kind of lens, which was nothing's ever going to be perfect. So just like do the best you can. And if you fall down, get back up. Like literally I had to learn how to fall and get back up. And then I just that imbued itself into the rest of my life. And so to be in this role where I am, you know, the voice of this organization for all intents and purposes, but also in charge of engagement and dealing with other people with CP and amplifying their stories and then connecting with parents. I mean, my friendship with Scott is something that's so important to me, you know, learning about different parents' experiences and then being the adult with CP that they've not yet met because I didn't know adults with CP when I was a kid. And representation is so important and understanding what could potentially happen, you know, for your child as they go through different phases of life is incredibly important. So all of those things kind of came together serendipitously for me to land here. I've been here for 2.5 years. I love it. And I couldn't be prouder of the work that we do. So thank you for letting me share a bit of my perspective.
Absolutely. That's so interesting. And it's so great for people to hear too, how that has shaped your career, your life. And I think that's important for parents and kids, no matter what it is, to that you know, your experiences are what shape what you do going forward. And that's a perfect example of it.
That's true. Yeah. And I wasn't always in the CP space. Like I was at different nonprofits, different organizations, and then things all fell into place and all of my work experience. And then my personal experience, just, it was like kind of a magical moment came to here. So it's great. Yeah.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. Scott, do you want to share your family's journey with CP with us?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, thank you so much. I came to the Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation from a completely different avenue, so to say. I've spent the past 20 years in the music business, actually. I was out finding bands and making records and working for some of the biggest record labels out there and working with some of the biggest artists in the world, you know, just making their records and helping them bring their art to life. And everything for me changed when my daughter was born and things weren't, you know, we didn't know, let's put it that way. We didn't know what was going on with my daughter when she was born, because she wasn't reacting in a typical way when she in the delivery room and, you know, a whole rush of doctors came in and it was just one of those weird experiences. Like we didn't know what was going on. And anytime that happens, you're very concerned. But my daughter experienced a stroke during pregnancy, and that stroke created like a paralysis on the right side of her body. And it was very noticeable. You know, it was the way her arm was kinked and the way her leg bent, the way she didn't react to things. It was concerning. It really was. But my wife and I, you know, after talking to a lot of specialists and trying to figure things out, we didn't know what the future months were going to hold. You know what I mean? So because the brain has so many abilities when you're brand new to the world, like Jocelyn had mentioned, you know, Marnie started to receive a lot of, you know, early intervention and a lot of therapies. And we tried a lot of different things. You know, we saw a lot of specialists and some kooky specialists at times, you know what I mean? You know, because I think that, you know, parents go on this hunt to try to figure out, you know, what it might be and how they can help, you know, and that's what my wife and I did. We basically quit our jobs and we sold our apartment to fund this idea of the fact that our kid was going to have a chance. You know, we were, you know, because, you know, you can spend, you know, months fighting with health insurance and you can get a lot of different perspectives. But the only perspective I wanted was to see growth, to see, you know, her hit different milestones. So we put her in, you know, a lot of therapies that were very, very different, you know, and we rode all over, you know, we had to put her in a bike and we rode all over the five boroughs essentially to meet with different people. And then we also, popped her in a bunch of classes, believe it or not, that we knew, you know, I'm not going to say she wasn't going to be successful in those classes, but if you put a kid that can't walk into a dance class, that's kind of an interesting perspective. You know, if you put a child in a swim class, that is most likely going to sink, you know, so it was interesting. And I think that one of the best ones was putting her in Taekwondo, knowing that she couldn't kick or punch with the right side of her body. But, you know, what we wanted to present to her was, even at like a very young age, one years old, you know, 15 months, 18 months, 2 years old, we wanted to put into her head that she could do anything. Like, go for it. Like, just let, you know, and, you know, and she also had a lot of, you know, bumpy roads because we did do a variety of different surgeries. You know, her eyes had problems, believe it or not. She had problems with eating because her CP affected her tongue and her eating. We didn't know if it was going to affect her language skills, but, you know, she was in a variety of different things because we just kept trying new things, talking to new people. And I think one of the interesting things, which I know we'll talk about, you know, more later, is the fact that, you know, I come at this from a parent's perspective. I don't know what it's going to be like for her in the future. And that's why I'm so lucky to have Jocelyn as a sounding board. I'm so lucky to have our foundation as a sounding board, because we are out to change the world. We're out to help people learn more about CP, you know, give them different resources to learn about it. But the one thing that I do know is that parents, and me especially, we're there to try to find a way to help our children. And I think one of the craziest things I ever did is I got these big knee pads, and when they told us that Marnie might not ever walk, I was never, ever going to let that be a statement that was going to live in my life. I was like, she's going to walk. We're going to do this. Like, I can help train her brain to walk. So I bought these big knee pads, and I bought them because I wanted to teach her how to walk. But you can't, if you have to bend over, and hold somebody's hips who's much smaller than you, like a 2 or 3 year old, your yeah. back really aches. So the right. only way to really do it the right way and spend, you know, 2 hours a day learning how to walk was to be on my knees. And I used to walk up and down the streets of Court Street in Brooklyn, holding her, you know, her hips and teaching her legs the motion of walking. Wow. And it, you know, that sound, I can still hear that sound in my head, the shushing up and down the streets of Court Street, the sound of my knees scraping on the sidewalk. It's just like one of those constant memories. But we did this for years, and I'm really thrilled to say that it actually helped retrain her brain, and she walked for the first time, my most proud moment of my life, in Maine, you know, right before her 4th birthday. Wow. And I can just say that, you know, that moment was one of the best things in the world, because it was something that we were told that might not happen for her. And it just proves the power of positivity, the power of believing. And that's what I'd like to think our foundation does. We give people the opportunity to dream and to think big and to just go after, you know, what they believe in. And that's what our foundation's trying to do. We're trying to fund science that's going to help people's lives. And combined with that is a bunch of believing and dreaming at the same time. So, you know, I mean, we've experienced a lot as a family, but I can say that it's the power of belief that I think exists in all of us and makes our work something that's so important, for sure.
That positivity, that story is so inspiring, by the way, what you just said, that's amazing. But what do you admire most about your daughter in her lived experience with CP?
The first time she said that her cerebral palsy was her superpower.
Oh, that's cute.
That's huge. That's huge. Yeah. You know, like, to not look at it as like, you know, her life is difficult. Like, anytime you can't pull up your pants, try to pull up your pants with one hand. Right. And I'm sorry to make such a basic statement,
no.
but we don't think about these things. It is hard to pull up your pants with one hand. And if that's the way your life works, it's difficult. But the fact that an 11-year-old kid can say that her CP is her superpower, I find to be inspiring. And the fact that she thinks of her cerebral palsy as something that defines her diversity in the world. Like, you know what I mean? Like, this is her CP should be celebrated. And the fact that she wants to celebrate things that might be a bit messy is really cool, in my opinion. So, and I can tell you that this perspective has been a perspective that she has learned by being able to talk to someone like Jocelyn, who teaches her about these things and how to look at the world in a different way and how to celebrate her disability. And that's what our foundation is trying to do on a day-to-day basis.
One of the really cool things about Marnie is, you know, parents have kids and their kids do art, and parents say, oh, my kid's art is really good. But like, if you saw the things that Marnie painted, you'd think an adult famous artist painted them. Scott showed them to me at some point last year, and I challenged Marnie. She popped into a Zoom call and I said, do the same painting with your right side. See what happens. Think completely differently, you know?
Yeah.
See and compare. This is what your right side does. And it's probably a really cool abstract painting of a waterfall and trees and mountains. And then like, make it a series and compare it with what you did with your other side.
Yeah. And yeah. That was a super cool idea that Jocelyn posed to Marnie. You know, we'll get into the science a bit more, but to work with your negative side, I don't want to call it a negative side, but to work with your palsy side. Palsy side. It takes a lot of energy. Jocelyn can talk about like sort of the energy that, you know, someone with CP exerts that is way more than, the typical human, let's put it that way. And she, you know, so Marnie has tried to paint with her opposite side. And it takes a lot of energy for her just to create those motions. But I think it's an incredible idea. And I'd be happy to share some of her paintings with you at some time for sure.
I will credit the person, Creations by Kittles on Instagram, is the person that inspired me to share that with you, because she made the Instagram account as an adult who was just embracing, you know, the side that was her palsy side. So I wanted to share that and make sure she gets some credit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just building on Scott's comment about the energy with CP, something else that I knew as like intrinsically as a kid and then found out was real is that people with CP use 3 to 5 times the energy just to exist as people without CP. So as an example, you know, when I went to college, everyone gains the freshman 15 and I lost 15 pounds, even though I was eating like fried ravioli and red velvet cake, cause I went to school in the South, because I was walking everywhere and my body was not used to it. But something that I learned within the last 2 years, I don't know why this didn't occur to me, that, you know, mental energy is energy. And the amount of energy I have to expend to walk around the streets of New York City where I live is immense. You know, the barricades on the sidewalk to keep bad things from coming onto the sidewalk, the people walking with their phones, please don't walk with your phones. You're not walking in a straight line when you walk with your phone. The people with umbrellas, the people with dog leashes, the people who just aren't paying attention or backing up, or construction, curbs that are too high that aren't cut, uneven ground, cracks in the sidewalk. Like, I am monitoring everything all the time and also have to think every time that I pick up my feet. So the amount of energy I'm using is both extra physical energy and extra mental energy to get from A to B.
Yeah. And that's something that people just don't think of. All those little things that you just mentioned, people take for granted and they just don't think about it, you know? Yeah. And how common is cerebral palsy? Forgive me if I'm naive.
No, it's very common. It is actually the most common lifelong physical disability in the world.
Oh, wow.
And there are 18 million people in the world who have CP, and 1 million of us live in the US. So we're not rare. We're everywhere, is something that I like to say. Yeah.
So and, that makes what you were just saying even more important.
You know, CP, is a wide range. The way that people experience CP is a wide range. So you have folks like Scott's daughter, where it affects one side of their body. You have people like me, where it affects both of our legs and we can walk. There are people where it affects both of their legs and they can't walk, or they can only walk sometimes. Some people will only affect one limb. Some people will affect two legs and an arm. Some people will affect all of their limbs and or their ability to speak. And then even within, you know, those breakdowns, there's just different levels, different ways that people experience things. I have a ton of friends with spastic diplegia, and it's like a big Venn diagram with a few different overlaps, and then we all have different experiences too. Basically, if you know one person with CP, you know one person with CP. So, you know, get to know as many stories as you can.
Yeah. And Jocelyn, you had a recent example from the Olympics that really brings to life the challenge that cerebral palsy brings. Could you please share that with us?
Sure. So the pandemic has been special for everyone. And over the last 18 months, it has really affected my CP in a different way. You know, it is a neurological injury. It occurs before birth, during birth, or shortly after birth. But because it affects your motor and all these like physical skills, you can sometimes think of it just as whatever parts are affected, that's your CP, but it's actually all in your brain. And that has been crystallized and cemented to me over the last 18 months. I will just freeze sometimes, not in the middle of walking, but if, for example, if I have stopped to wait for an elevator and it comes and I'm not ready to move, or my body just decides it's not going to move, it won't move. And when Simone Biles had her whole thing in the Olympics where she had to pull out of events because she had what she called the twisties, it's like she knew she could do the things and her brain would not let her do them. And nothing that she did would overcome that. You just have to keep trying and trying. So I have to try to reset myself. You know, sometimes I'll sit down. Like if I'm getting out of the shower, I would be freezing at the exit of my bathroom. And so I would sit down and literally talk to myself out loud, like, move, come on, you're fine. And sometimes it would work and sometimes it wouldn't. And then I came up with a hack where I drag my desk chair to the door of my bathroom every morning, just when I go. So it's there for me to touch when I get out. I don't need to lean on it. I'm not using it like a walker, but it gets my brain out of its own weird loop. And so I'm realizing now, as I am nearing 40, wherever that came from, that I need to like deal with CP in a different way than I have in the past. You know, previously when I went to physical therapy, it was stretch me for a while. I'll do the leg press. I'll do the bike. But now I'm looking at neurological PT to get me out of these. It's quite psychological and neurological where you freeze. You know, the freezing is neurological, but then knowing that you could freeze, that's when that becomes psychological. Like it's actually happening because of my CP. And then it is like compounding on itself because I know that at any time I could freeze and then be stuck. And what in the world am I going to do about it? So it's scary. It's frustrating. But I think I have finally found some people that can help, but it kind of points to another issue that, kind of the CP community has to deal with, which is there is a lot of care and knowledge about pediatrics and a lot that's missing for people once they turn 18 or 21. It's kind of called the care cliff. You sort of fall off of it. And a lot of neurological physical therapists are at hospitals, and I don't really want to have to like ever go to a hospital, really not right now, but like have to go to a hospital for PT. So I've had to hunt and connect with a bunch of different people that I know to find some people and then feel them out, because I have to be really good friends with my PT because they're in my space and I'm with you a lot. So hopefully that will help. But I felt like when Simone Biles had the twisties and she said that, the real word for it is like proprioception, knowing where you are in space. And that's an issue for a lot of people with CP. Then I could just use that as an example and say like, I got the twisties. It's not the twisties. It's a not fun name for it, but it's like, I know I can do a thing and my brain is not letting my body do it. And my brain doesn't trust my body and my body doesn't trust my brain. So we'll see what happens.
That's really interesting though. It's a perfect comparison, I think, with the Simone Biles story.
Yeah.
And you talked about some of the challenges during COVID. You know, a lot of people have gone through physical and emotional challenges. Is there anything else that has happened during COVID that's allowed your community to triumph over what you've been going through?
Well, yes and no. So I'll start on the negative and end on the positive, because it's better to end on a positive note. I didn't go to physical therapy for way too long in the middle of the pandemic, and I could just feel it. I could feel everything get tight. I was going once or twice a week for 4+ years. And then all of a sudden I was not going, and I was working from my bed because I lived in a New York City apartment, didn't have room for a desk. So everything was tight. My back was tight. Also stress just like makes you tight and makes your neck hurt anyway. And so I did 3 flights of stairs in my building to see if I could go out on the roof deck that we have. And for 5 days afterwards, my legs hurt so bad, like I had done some tough mudder or something. Like I don't, 3 flights of stairs up, 3 flights of stairs down, and my quads were just on fire because I hadn't moved in a month. And because it didn't feel safe to go, you know? And I, you know, was in touch with like former PTs from my adulthood. And I said, like, what am I supposed to do? And they said, at some point your pain will overwhelm your fear, and that's when you'll go. Like, don't go before that. But when your pain overwhelms your fear, you'll go. And so, you know, you double mask and you go, and it was just me and one PT at a time. But it's just so strange. And then I think one of the things that has caused my freezing issue is, remember earlier I talked about how I have to take in so much information. I'm so out of practice in taking in all of that information. My brain's like, what is this? What are all these things? Like it's a muscle I haven't been using, metaphorically speaking. So that's a challenge for me as an adult, but I know for kids with CP, especially that get PT intensives and have to go to clinics, like those were closed. Children that had speech therapy, there's just only so much you can do over Zoom, especially when a kid is, you know, not yet one or two or three. And then the parent has to deal with so much and take on so much because the kid, your child is a child and has all of the things that a child has. And additionally, CP and all of the things that CP brings, and additionally, the pandemic. So the load that parents of kids with CP have had to take on over the last 18 months, like, it's hard enough for me as an adult to deal with. So I salute you. I feel for you. I cannot wrap my head around what you have been through. I think things are opening up a little bit, but that's some of the negative side. The really positive side is Zoom and other, you know, online interactive platforms that make things accessible to people where they wouldn't be accessible before. So like I talked about our limited energy reserve, if 92Y in Manhattan is doing an event in the middle of the winter, I'm probably not going to buy a ticket to go because I don't know if it'll snow. If they're doing it online in the middle of the winter, I'm going to do it. I'm going to buy my ticket and watch it. I'm going to, you know, watch an online concert. I'm going to interact with people, even though it's not in the three-dimensional way, almost more than I would otherwise, because I know I won't have to negotiate whatever slippery stairs, whatever weird like gap between the subway and the platform, whatever sidewalk is bad, whatever entrance to the building. Like, I don't have to worry about that. And the other thing is that people with CP are masters at adaptation. Like, people who only have full use of one hand, they still figure out how to pull up their pants, to go back to what Scott was saying. Like, you figure it out because you have to. So this whole 18 months has been a real exercise in adaptation, and people with disabilities, people with CP and all kinds of other disabilities really leading the way. And it's also just a big reminder that there's a way to bring so many people in, that our voices haven't necessarily been heard because the spaces where people would allow communication have not necessarily been accessible. And as long as you have an internet connection, everything is accessible to you. So voices have been heard, you know, and there's also hope. Like, I don't know the percentage, but the percentage of unemployment among people with disabilities is way higher than people without. And in the past, a lot of companies will have discriminated against people because of their disability, and or they've hired them but said, like, we're not going to allow you to work remotely. That's just not possible. Well, now we know it is completely possible. So hopefully this is something that stays in place and opens up a lot of different opportunities for people with CP and other disabilities.
That's a great point. It's great how you laid that out, the positives and negatives, and the positives of the technology, like you said. And just that last point that you made, I didn't even think about that. But yeah, it's going to open up remote work for a lot of people. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say also that people can live in a place and work in another place, that they don't have to tie where they're living to where they're working. So they can be in an accessible home and work in a potentially inaccessible city somewhere else.
That's very true. What do you think some of the most important things for parents, family, friends of children with CP, what do you think some of the most important things for them to understand if they're listening right now?
So parents, I'd say representation is important. So I know, first of all, there are a ton of books out there as well, just about kids with CP and other disabilities. Like, it is a booming industry. I know there's a book coming out shortly called Demystifying Disability. That's super helpful. It also talks about language and different things. But to make sure that your child isn't the only person they see with their disability. And even if, like, let's say your child uses a walker, even if you don't know other people with CP who use a walker, if you find other kids that use walkers for other reasons, that they're not the only kid that uses a walker, or they're not the only kid in leg braces, that they're just not the only one in their own life with that disability. You know, my first friends were in that preschool where I had physical therapy from a baby onward. So I always knew other people with CP, and I know most people don't have that luxury. So representation, also finding friends so that, you know, they will experience the things that kids experience in all stages of life. And it's just really helpful to have your friends with CP also, where you're like, does this happen to you? Is this weird thing? Is this just me? Or is this like CP? I don't know. They're my sounding boards for things like that. I would also say the reason that there's so much emphasis on walking is that the world is built for people who walk. It just is. And so that's why it's easier to get from A to B when you're walking, but that's not the only way to move. And going back to the energy piece, The most important thing is that you move in an energy efficient way. And if you can keep, you know, your body aligned as much as possible. So for the things I was talking about earlier, that's great. But if your child doesn't walk, that's okay. If your child walks sometimes and uses a wheelchair other times, that's also okay. I use the example of if you were going to a concert and your kid was really excited about the concert and they had recently gained the ability to walk, they would really want to show off that ability to walk because they'd be really, really proud of it, understandably. But if they walk from the car to your seat at like whatever level of an amphitheater, done. Drained, tired, that's it. Like, whoops, I'm going to fall asleep and miss the whole show. And if they use their wheelchair or their other assistive device that takes some of the energy off of their body, they can sit and enjoy the show. So it's really just about finding whatever combination of mobility is the most comfortable for your kid. If that's all walking, that's great. If it's some walking, that's great. If it's no walking, that's great. And as a corollary to that, not attaching shame to not being able to gain the ability to move a certain way, so that when your child grows up, if they lose their mobility, because that stuff does change in your 20s, 30s, et cetera, it's not going to be, they're not going to have a hard time or as hard of a time. It's going to be hard. I'm dealing with it now, like wrapping their head around that it can change. Cause there won't be that shame. It'll just be like, I moved the way I could move. And now this is the way I move. And like, all right, this is what it's going to be. So I have a cane at home that I don't use yet, but like it's there for when I will need to use it, but I'm concerned about it because that's a third limb I'm going to have to think about now. So I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
And I think a lot of what you just said is important for, you know, grandparents or friends or people who aren't around kids every day, but maybe they're looking after them one day or I think that a lot of that is important for those people too.
I was a champion napper as a kid as well. I don't know, Scott, if Marnie, I mean, honestly, I'm a long sleeper. I'm a champion napper. Like that was where I developed my theory that CP takes more energy. And I learned that it's scientifically accurate. It's because, like for example, your quad is actually four muscles, which I didn't know until a few years ago. And so one specific part of my quad on each leg is firing literally all the time. It has been firing since the moment of my brain injury. It is called inappropriate firing. So if you had a muscle in your body that never stopped firing and you were 39, that muscle would be real tired.
Right. True.
And it would just like make you tired in general, like, or just tired earlier in the day or what have you, because there are muscles you can't stop firing. And on the other side of that, there are muscles I can't isolate. Like I can't, you tell me to do something with my calf. No, impossible. Yeah. Doesn't get from here to there. So
that's right.
And that's one of the things, just to tie it a little bit back to the research, is that, and the tiredness and all the things I kind of deal with as an adult, the chronic pain research resonates with me pretty deeply as well, because that's not something I experienced as a kid, though there are kids with CP who do experience pain, but 75% of the people with CP in the world experience chronic pain. So the fact that we're funding research into alternative treatments for it that aren't addictive and that can also potentially, you know, not zonk you out. So you don't have to choose between curing your pain and being part of your own life. That's something that resonates with me.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott, were there any things during COVID, everything that's been going on, that you had to overcome with your daughter?
Yeah, well, we were unable to do physical therapy and occupational therapy. You know, when you can't go do that, you know, as Jocelyn has just mentioned, you know, your body is going to hurt, or your body's not going to continue to learn in the way that it needs to learn, especially with my Marnie. But what we actually did, and this is wild, but we put Marnie into competitive go-karting. So
really?
Who would have thought competitive go-karting would be physical therapy and occupational therapy and, you know, muscle strengthening all in one? But let me tell you a bit more about this. So, you know, first of all, when she races, she has to wear a helmet. So this helmet has a face mask. It goes over her bottom chin. And now that's COVID compliant. She's got a helmet on. But the cool thing about racing is these go-karts are going, you know, 45 to 50 miles per hour. But what's so important about this is that it was the first time that Marnie was on an equal playing field with her peers. And what I mean by that, when she sat her butt into the go-kart, she was just like everybody else because the machine gave her those abilities that she now shares with her peers. And what's so cool about... Yeah, it's super interesting. It's like, because if she was on the soccer field, she's not going to have the push off to go at a ball or even on a tennis court. She's not, you know, the tennis ball moves pretty fast and you have to be able to lunge to do that. Well, when we put her in the go-kart, she was a bit tentative at first. But then when she started to understand how her muscles had to work, how her eyes had to work, how she had to read the line of the race that she was in. But the other crazy thing is she had to use her right arm and her left hand to control the steering wheel. The bilateral movement right there was incredible therapy for her brain. But the other thing is too, is that the right foot was the gas and the left foot is the brake. I mean, come on, her right foot doesn't work all that well, but this was positive messaging that took place with therapy, like with racing, it was therapy. The other cool thing is that when you're racing that fast, there's G forces. There's your neck muscles, your core muscles have to be strong in order to control that machine. So I will say that go-kart racing has single-handedly been the most important PT/OT strengthening that we have ever done.
Wow.
And granted, yes, as the world starts to open back up, well, we don't know these days, but I'm telling you right now, her racing program is the thing we cannot miss because you actually see the strength in her arms, the strength in her leg, the strength in her neck. You can see how she holds her body in a different way with what karting brought to her.
Yeah.
And I also will add, and I don't know how many listeners here are interested in Formula One racing and watch the Netflix show Drive to Survive and whatnot, but Marnie's actually being noticed by some of the primaries at some of these Formula One racing organizations as a girl who is racing. You know, you have to understand racing is pretty male dominant. And Marnie is going to be a pioneer in this world because she's racing and she has CP and she's actually beating a whole bunch of other kids. So people are taking notice. This is pretty cool stuff. It's
cool. Can I add something? You like created this really important opening that I feel like it's a good space to share, which is, you know, if your kid has CP, find out what they love and what they're good at and nurture that and celebrate that. And when you talk about your child with other parents, talk about that too. Make sure that CP isn't the only thing you talk about when you talk about your child. And that,
I was just gonna, ask Scott, was this her idea or was it your, like, how did that even come about, the go-karts?
They went to a birthday party and they giggled the whole time. They loved every minute of it, but they were only at like what's called speed two. And Marnie came back after that birthday party and she's like, "Dad, I think I really like speed. I like to go fast. I like to go fast." And I'm like, "Marnes, let's hold on a second here. You know, I don't want you to get hurt." And the crazy thing is that she did a bunch of training in the lower speeds. But then right when they put her on the highest speed, which is called speed four, she ran around the corner and she slammed into the wall. And as a parent, I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy." And the windshield, the shield on her helmet snapped off and it, you know, everything went into slow motion as she hit the wall and that turned into her race car name. So her racing, cause you have like racer names and her name is Scotch Tape Graves because they put the shield back on her helmet and they Scotch taped it there just so she could get through the session. But forever now her racing name is Scotch Tape Graves, which is pretty cool.
That's amazing. I love that.
So, but yeah, Jocelyn is right. You know, find an activity that your kid loves and just keep pushing it. And believe it or not, the byproduct of it is Marnie stronger now? Like, who would have thought? She is stronger.
Right.
She is stronger from racing. Then I'm not going to be down on any PT or OT, but PT and OT is like, oh, mom, I got to go to PT and OT again. She's only lived the life of PT and OT. But when we say we're going to racing, everybody's excited. Let me tell
it's
you.
It's like when you hide spinach in a smoothie.
Right.
Exactly. It is the spinach and smoothie scenario for sure.
And look for her on the F1 track in the future.
For sure.
Well, you know, she's been reaching out. She's trying to reach out to Lewis Hamilton and Lando Norris and all these people who are making huge impact in the world. So we like to think that her story will get noticed by them for sure, because those guys are world changers as well, for sure.
I love that. Well, thank you for sharing that, Scott.
Thank you.
And we're almost into September now, which was a very special month for you guys and those living with CP across the nation. So tell us about the annual September event that's coming up.
Oh, man. The thing I love about September is that you can do it any way you want. It is a challenge for the entire month of September for people to take the equivalent of 10,000 steps a day and raise money to support cerebral palsy research. The proceeds from September go back to CPARF. And when I say that you can do it however you want, I mean it. There are more than 60 activities that convert to steps. My favorite is physical therapy. You can also do adaptive sports, roll in a wheelchair, whether it's manual or electric. You can do yoga. You can swim. You can dance. House cleaning counts. If you've ever tried to change a fitted sheet, you know what I mean. I think that's for everyone. That takes a lot of energy. Basically, moving in any way that works for you. And you log it on our app, on our website, you put it in the converter. And frankly, you know, if you're someone with CP that wants to do it, do an activity that's close to something on our list or do something. And even if it's not on our list, like it counts as movement, just pick a thing, count your steps and set your goal for yourself, whatever that may be.
I was going to say, does it have to be 10,000 or can people do any amount that they want? Or is that the
10,000, I think, came from, there was like a lot of wisdom around, you know, that's the ideal amount.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Yeah.
So I think that's where it started many, many years ago. And it's like a nice number. 10,000 is a nice number, but I understand it can be overwhelming for some people. That said, like some of the more competitive people will do like 20 or 30,000 steps a day. Kudos to them. I mean, Scott, I think you rack them up. You like walk and run around.
But that's the funny thing. If you were to look at your iPhone in the health tracker just today without even September being there, you would notice a significant amount of steps there, or at least. And so we do it naturally. And what we're trying to do during September is obviously we want people involved because what we're doing is so important. But you're doing it indirectly. Think about how many people are walking their dogs. Think about how many people are maybe about to walk their children to school. All of those steps will add up, and each one of those steps will make people think about how they're changing people's lives with cerebral palsy. And it's also going to help us do the research that we need to do. So the steps are significant and the dollars raised are incredibly significant, but people are doing it and they don't even realize it. So that's why it's so special.
I'm a big golfer, so I'm thinking maybe I'll play 18 holes and get the steps in that way.
You'd be surprised on how many you actually do. Like, you know, 15, you know, like 30 minutes of playing basketball, an hour of hitting tennis balls, the multiple walks that you do with your dog to give them exercise. You are accumulating steps that you don't even realize you're doing. So I'd like to challenge everybody to have a look at what they're doing now before September starts.
Yeah.
And then find a way to go the extra mile. Find a way to just do it, because what it does, and I'll tell you this right now, is after COVID, well, COVID of last year, let's call it way back then.
COVID one.
I had gained almost like a freshman 15. I had gained I'm going to call it a COVID 15 or 20. And September got me onto the right path. I was like, I have to do this. Like, come on. Mm-hmm. And it actually put me on the right track. I lost some weight. But the other thing is why businesses and big corporates that we work with, they used September last year because their people were home as well. They all knew that their employees would have you know, they to have some of that team spirit, but also they knew that people are better workers. We're better workers when our brain is more in sync because of a health addition that we're bringing to our life. So this is important all around. It helps our foundation, but it gets you on track for something. And then I actually stuck with it until it got too cold outside, and then I said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Come on,
but I did it in past Thanksgiving, believe it or not. And you know how when you have sort of a ritual, you stick with it, and September was a ritual for me, and I'm really looking forward to getting going with it again for sure.
That's great. I'm going to get involved as well. And if our listeners want to get involved, what is the website? And you said there was an app too they could do it on?
Yeah. The website is steptember.us. And you can download the app in either the Google Play Store or the Apple Store. It's in both. Nice. I think it's the Android Store. Honestly, I'm an iPhone user. Whoops. But yeah, it's available in the main app stores. And then the way that it works as a fundraising challenge is like, it's not that the money is raised because you stepped. That's sort of an extra step, if you will, that you have to take to fundraise. It's a peer-to-peer fundraising challenge. It just means that you're doing something really cool for yourself. So if you're someone like Scott and you're taking on the 10,000, you're going to make it 20,000 steps a day. You want to shout that from the rooftops. You want to go on your Facebook. You want to go on your Instagram. You want to go on your Twitter. Yeah. You want to go and text everyone in your address book. You want to send a mass BCC email to everyone you know and see which people from your past will give you money. It will surprise you. But they're not giving you money. They're giving money to CPARF. But it's
to the
like,
foundation, yeah.
Yeah. It's saying, you know, we're doing this really cool challenge. I'm doing something. Will you support me while I do it? And you'll be making a difference when you do support. And then one of the things is that when you do make a September profile, within your dashboard, there is a button to create a Facebook fundraiser that you have to create from your September profile. But when you do, you can raise the money on Facebook and it bounces back to your profile. So keeps it easy. If you're not like really savvy in the fundraising, it's a few clicks of the button. We pre-wrote some copy for you and you can just let it be.
That's great. You make it easier for people. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And the one of the coolest things about Steptember is you can never say September again because right. Your brain just sort of, but what I wanted to mention too. So, you know, listeners, you know, check out steptember.us and we're also going to be able to give a free code to everybody who is listening to this podcast. And the free code is step free. So step free, log in to steptember.us and give this a try. Trust us. It's a ton of fun for sure.
I'm definitely going to try it. That's great. Step free. And you're right. When I first saw in my notes, Steptember, I was like, that's never going to get out of my head now.
No, I had a doctor's appointment like in that month and I called and they said, what day is your appointment? I said, September something. And they're like, excuse me, when, what? It will just be there forever. And that's a great thing. And then the other piece of it, honestly, is you can do as much of the movement as you want. If you're really jonesed about that, go for it, break the 10,000, break the 20. If you're intimidated by it, there's no requirement that you do 10,000 steps a day. It's really about setting an activity goal for yourself. Even if the activity is like gardening in your yard or like dancing to 5 of your favorite songs on a playlist, and then maybe, you know, up that goal every day. So don't get intimidated by any aspect of it. We really want it to be inclusive for everyone.
Right. That's great. Well, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you would each like to add that you didn't get to say? I mean, this has been an amazing episode, all the information you've given and the stories that you've told. So we appreciate you sharing your stories, but is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up?
I would just say that for every person who has listened, I appreciate your time. And I ask that you share this information with someone who might not know about it, who might not otherwise come across it. One of the big barriers that we face in the disability community is it's not necessarily lack of awareness, but it's a combination of lack of awareness and lack of accessibility. So if people don't know, then people don't think they have to make things accessible. And when things are not accessible, you're not going to see people like us out And then they'll say, we don't need to make things accessible because people with disabilities don't come here. It's a catch-22 situation, but it all starts with people understanding that there are people with CP, there are people with other disabilities out in the world. And we all make important contributions, whether we're in the workforce or we're not. Like, we deserve to be here. We all have important points of view. Our voices are all important. So share this information with people who wouldn't otherwise hear it, and then challenge them to share it with someone else too. And then on top of that, if you want to join September and add that piece to the conversation, please do. We hope that you're moved and motivated by what we've shared today to do so.
Nice. And Scott, is there anything else you'd like to add?
What Jocelyn has taught me over the past year and a half was to celebrate disability. And I think that that's what everybody needs to do. Meet someone with a disability and get to know them for who they are as a person, not get to know them who they are because of their disability. They, celebrate disability. It is part of what makes our diversity so beautiful. And I think that that's, an important part of what we're trying to do, but celebrate and just realize how important, life is, for sure.
Absolutely. Well, thank you both, Jocelyn and Scott, for being here from the Cerebral Palsy Alliance Research Foundation. And thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. And thank you for all the listeners who have been listening for the Stepping Stones Museum for the Children Under the Cupola podcast. I'm Kevin Begley. We will talk to you on the next episode. Thanks.